It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Department of Homeland Security has ended a Biden-era humanitarian parole program that allowed people under threat in their home country to live and work in the U.S. legally.
That program admitted more than 500,000 people to the U.S., including Haitian immigrants living in a small city in east central Wisconsin.
In New London, a group of French-speaking immigrants have been in that community for about 2 years. They received a notification last week sent to them in English, encouraging that they self-deport immediately.
We have two members of the New London community who have been working with this group of Haitian migrants.
Mark Christopher is an immigration attorney, and Elaine Pohl is a retired librarian and volunteer translator. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us. It's our pleasure.
Same here.
Mark, let's start with you. You had expected this announcement from the Department of Homeland Security for months. You've been living and working with this community for years. What are their legal options in this moment?
They're very limited. In some cases, an individual may be able to apply for asylum, but asylum is a very detailed and specific type of relief. And many of our clients, while they face torture, while they face violence, they may not qualify for the actual asylum grant. Short of having an immediate relative in the United States who's also a United States citizen, there are no options for them.
You have attempted to make asylum cases for some people. Not all those cases were successful, I understand. Why is that?
Yes, many people think that if you can prove that you're going to be harmed or tortured going back to your home country, that you qualify for asylum. That's not the case. Asylum is very specific. You have to show that you're going to be harmed or tortured by the government. And you also have to prove the motivation about why the government is coming after you. You have to show they're coming after you because of your political opinion, your race, nationality, or your membership to some other particular social group. For most of these individuals, they're scared to go back because there are gangs in the community that run lawless, and they operate with impunity all throughout the country of Haiti. And they don't necessarily work directly with the government. And they don't choose you because to harm you because of your political opinion, your race, or membership to any group. They come after you because they're seeking money and they're looking to extort and they're looking to cause fear, really.
Elaine, you have been a volunteer French translator for this community since they arrived in 2023. What have you been hearing from some of the families over the last few months?
Well, they've been very happy to live where they are. They found jobs. The schools embrace their children. They have tried to live the life of the immigrants we have documented over a couple centuries almost now. And all of a sudden, the rug is pulled from under them.
You said they have found jobs and become rooted in the community. What are some of those jobs like?
In their home countries, in Haiti, the people I most acquainted with came from Haiti, and they speak Haitian Creole and French and are learning English. So those are the people I interact with. They had, for the most part, middle-class lives. I know one was a mechanic, another one was a carpenter, another one was a phlebotomist, one was a grocer, and one was a technical school professor. And they abandoned not just their jobs, but their homes, their families, because their lives were threatened. And thought they had found a welcoming country.
Elaine, you have spent time with this community. How has your life been changed by this group of Haitian immigrants and what you've learned from them?
I feel extremely privileged because of my native language, because the school contacted me, and that's a while back now, it's 8 years, and ask whether I would be willing to facilitate registration or meeting with parents, open houses, and so on and so forth. Don't imagine that I'm very busy with that job, but it's occasional and very fulfilling because I feel I can make a difference in the family's integration. And they're so willing to listen to the teacher's advice, the administration's advice, and of course the kids are thriving. For the parents, it's quite a bit harder. I don't know if your listeners have experienced learning a foreign language past age 30, but that's quite complex. But the kids soak it up and become in de facto translators for their parents.
You've been part of very special life moments, milestones like a teacher conference or an open house.
Yes, and you ask how it made a difference for me. Well, I would have never had a chance unless I was asked by the school to translate to get to know immigrants in our area because they work long hours. They keep to themselves, not by design, but because in many cases they are shy and their understanding of English being limited, it's difficult for them to get fully integrated. But I have come to know about some of their customs. They love to cook in many families, and you get into their homes and it smells wonderful. Hmm. But what I wish is that more of our community had a chance to get to know them, because we lead, unfortunately, very parallel lives, and that hampers true understanding and true communication. Sometimes we hear terrible things. You know, I go back to the Springfield, Ohio incident that just inspired our community to really work hard to get to know our neighbors, our newcomer community. But it's not that easy. You cannot knock on someone's door and say, "I'd love to meet you." And in many cases, you don't want to scare people. You don't want to infringe on them. So I understand why it's difficult for people to know their story as well. And that's why I'm grateful for this opportunity to amplify their story.
Thank you. We're talking with volunteer translator Elaine Pohl and immigration attorney Mark Christopher about their work with a group of Haitian immigrants in New London whose legal status has recently been terminated by the Trump administration. Mark, looking at this letter, and it says in part, the Biden administration lied to America. They allowed more than 500,000 poorly vetted aliens from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, and their immediate family members to enter the U.S. through these disastrous parole programs, end quote. Is that true? Have people in this program been properly vetted?
What this program was is that everybody who entered has been vetted. In other words, they have gone through criminal background checks. In addition to that, they also have to have a sponsor here in the United States, somebody who has agreed to help them acclimate themselves in the United States, and also to provide some basic means of financial support if they need it. But in almost every case, they don't, because these individuals have found jobs right away. They've got acclimated into the community. The self-sufficiency of the individuals here has just been amazing. Hmm.
Another part of that notification said that the parole program allowed immigrants to compete for American jobs and undercut American workers. There have been reports that at least 100 of the Haitian immigrants worked at Tyson Foods, the meat processing plant in New London. What impact have these immigrants had on the local economy?
And again, I disagree with that. And you don't have to take my word for it. Go ask any of the employers, the manufacturers, the builders, the construction company owners that are here in central Wisconsin. These are very good, hardworking laborers that were so desperately in need. And whether it's here, whether it's in Ohio, what we've seen is that there has been a labor shortage. People who choose not to work. We've got companies who can't fill voids. I've talked to people who work at the Tyson plant, and they've indicated to me they are so happy that these individuals are here. It gives them more freedom in their schedule. They're no longer working double shifts. They're no longer having to work the night shift. They're able to take more vacations when they want to. So it's provided flexibility, not only for the businesses themselves, but also the other so-called American workers that work there as well, too.
Elaine, you referenced hardworking families. What would you like to add about this?
Well, I would echo Mark's words about their schedule. For instance, this weekend, they were working on Saturday when a lot of people here to take the weekend off. Not only do they take the extra hours, but they also work weekends. They're so ready to take any shift, many of them work second shift, that's not, or third shift, that's not appealing to most of us after a few years. So they take all the jobs that really beginning workers have to take. And I would like to add that no matter how tired they were, they still came to my classes. I gave classes at the Washington Center in New London, and they would come to learn English. Now, the Fox Valley Tech has replaced me, and they take the classes online or in person, but they work so hard at what they do without complaining. I must add that Mark probably be more able to talk about this than me, but when I translated for the asylum request, I was stunned by their stories because I knew those people, or I thought I knew those people, but hearing their heart-rending or reading their heart-rending stories also changes me, of course. I didn't realize, because I've never asked about the trauma they've gone through. It's not my place. So they go about their day in a cheerful way. I would add that many of them are very religious. And their faith, as a matter of fact, is just this morning, I received a message telling me God will provide. And their faith sustains, it's hard to put a percentage, but I would say at least 80% of the Haitians I know.
Mark, have any of your clients been fearful or reluctant to go to meetings or hearings regarding asylum status and the process that plays out in the legal realm?
Absolutely, they have. They are aware of all of the reports that we've been seeing nationwide of ICE coming to different locations, of picking up people rather indiscriminately. I have had a number of informational sessions, both at our library there and in my office. And I find that, you know, some people do show up, but then there's some other people who say, I would go, but I just don't want to present myself where I could potentially be picked up by ICE. And or their friends will tell me that, oh, I had a friend who was going to come, but they're a little nervous because it's being held at the library and they're concerned that ICE could get wind of this informational session and be there. So they're aware of what's going on nationwide, and it scares them.
Department of Homeland Security said if people self-deport, they'll receive a $1,000 exit bonus once they arrive in their home country. What might some of these community members be going back to, and how would they make a relocation possible?
Yeah, what I tell people is to put yourself in their situation. In other words, you've been told that you can come into a country whereby you're safe, whereby you can work. And they're so happy to have just the most basic things in life, clean water, a bed to sleep in, the opportunity to earn a decent wage. Most of these people came here because their life back in Haiti was consumed by violence, by not knowing whether or not they would be able to get medical care, not being able to sustain a job because they may be extorted by the local gangs. Some of the cases that I've worked on involve, a gentleman whose house was set on fire and destroyed by a local gang because he did not pay a ransom. We've also had another gentleman who was held at gunpoint by an opposition political group. And so this is the world that they're coming from. And just to have the things that we take for granted every day, safety, food, a job, a warm bed, that's what they want to have.
Elaine, you've scheduled a meeting with your local representatives about the situation. And I wonder, what is your message to lawmakers and fellow New London community members about this group of people who've developed lives here in Wisconsin?
Well, first, I want to speak about the community at large that has been quite supportive. When I've reached out to several groups, they've said, how can we help? And so a small group has really gotten together and say, what can we do in practical terms? And so we've started to raise funds through the community credit union, the local community credit union, and people have contributed money, so because they don't know what to do to help right now. As far as our lawmakers, I'm personally quite disappointed. I have sent personal letters to our federal officials, and none have deigned to even acknowledge my letters. And recently, our state senator has, and so we have a meeting scheduled for next week with several HR people from companies who employ our immigrants. Because as Mark said, again, they're very proud. Those companies are very proud of their immigrant population. They want to hang on to them. So I wanted our elected officials to understand how crucial those people are, because I figured that possibly economic arguments would hold sway, but apparently nothing does. And for the life of me, I can't understand the sheer cruelty, the disregard for other human beings, and this truly dehumanizing of the other is hard to take when we talk so much about being Wisconsin nice.
Well, Elaine and Mark, thank you for sharing this story, and thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
It is my pleasure.
Elaine Pohl is a retired librarian and volunteer translator in the East Central Wisconsin community of New London. Mark Christopher is an immigration attorney with offices in Appleton and Milwaukee. They've been working with a group of Haitian immigrants in New London who abruptly had their legal immigration status terminated by the Trump administration.